Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Straight from the Source, streaming to you on Heritage Radio Network. You can always find the show archived on heritageradionetwork.org and as a podcast on iTunes. My name's Clay Gordon, and in the nearly 20 years that I've been following the chocolate industry, literally from tree to mouth, I visited cacao farms throughout the Americas and spent time with farmers, merchants, and some of the world's best chocolate makers. Growing cacao is very hard work, and it's hard not to notice that farmers are often not paid fairly for the work that they do. Straight from the Source is inspired by those experiences with a mission of exploring issues in fair and ethical sourcing in cacao, chocolate, coffee, and other foods, with participants involved in every link of the supply chain, from growers to producers to chefs, certification bodies, and organizations interested in promoting the concept of good food. My guest today is Gino Della Gasparina, the founder of Meridian Cacao, a brand new boutique cocoa brokerage firm created specifically to cater to the needs of startup hobbyists and smaller craft chocolate makers looking to source high-quality beans but don't have the resources to buy tons at a time. Meridian Cacao sources directly from farmers with whom the company has developed direct relationships and manages the entire supply chain from the farm to their warehouse in Portland, Oregon, guaranteeing the chain of custody. In this first segment, we're going to be discussing how and why Gino was motivated to start the company. And then after the break, we're going to be talking about some of the challenges of direct sourcing and what it means for the farmer, the chocolate maker, and the consumer. Hey, welcome, Gino.
Hey, Clay, how's it going?
You know, I'm doing fine today. How are things out in Portland today?
Oh, it's not so bad. Just another beautiful day. No complaints.
Glad to hear. As an old Portland resident, a beautiful day is a wonderful thing. I remember being stuck in many, many dark, cloudy, rainy, foggy weeks.
Oh, we get our fair share of those, for sure.
I'm sure you do. So, where did the inspiration for Meridian Cacao come from?
I guess it all started back in 2009. I was finishing up my economics degree, and I got the opportunity to intern at the American Chamber of Commerce in Trinidad and Tobago. And being close to graduating and getting the opportunity to go down to the Caribbean and kind of get some real-world experience, I kind of jumped on it. I did a lot of research in trade agreements and market entry type stuff for American companies looking to do business in Trinidad. And with about 3 months left, I started working on a project for the Ministry of Agriculture. And now they have a whole array of food security issues, and so I kind of got to familiarize myself with the industry, and I think that was where I really fell in love with agriculture and whatnot. And so fast forward 2 years, about this January, I believe, Charlie Wellock of Woodblock Chocolate was shopping for a new commercial space for his new factory. And he was looking at the warehouse space right next to where my parents work. He had heard that I went to Trinidad through talking with my mother, and we started talking, and I guess the rest is history. I don't know. It seems to be a common thing in the chocolate world, but there's usually an identifiable time when one gets bitten by the cocoa bug.
That's very, very true.
And that was it.
And so what did Charlie come to you and ask you about your experience in Trinidad?
Well, we first started talking about cacao, and I had learned a little bit. I had worked with some people at the cocoa research unit, just kind of compiling some information when I was down there. And so he was interested in sourcing, and I could tell he was super excited about the cocoa that Trinidad had to offer, and we kind of just started talking, and he talked about his problems as a chocolate maker that, you know, eventually was moving out of his kitchen and the problems he had with finding cacao in small quantities. He kind of had a bunch of ideas, and he's really been one of my, one of my mentors, so to say, and been an awesome guy. And so we ended up about 2 months after we've met, and we've sat over probably a million chocolate bars and 1,000 cups of coffee. We found ourselves in Trinidad. We decided to go and kind of see what we could find. And so, yeah, we both ended up in Trinidad. I think it was this March.
Okay. So Charlie provided the impetus to get you back to Trinidad, where you had done some research, and then go take advantage of the relationships that you developed working within the Ministry of Agriculture. And the West Indian Cocoa Research Institute on the island of Trinidad is, you know, one of the most famous in the world. And the island of Trinidad itself has a pretty storied history when it comes to cacao itself.
Absolutely.
All right. So there's a variety of cacao bean called the Trinitario. It comes from the island. It was developed, I believe, in the 1700s by some monks who were trying to help the island recover after some disease just took out the crop that were there. And so they did a hybrid of some Criollo variety and some Forastero variety and came across this hybrid which was able to resist the disease that had cut down production on the island. I think that's the story. Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay. And so you're with Charlie, you're traveling around the island, primarily Trinidad. You know, what are some of the things that you noticed about the cocoa economy down there, the way farmers were treated, the variability in production and production quality, and maybe some of the issues related to government control down there?
All right. Well, I think it's a really interesting tale what's going on in Trinidad. While the soils and kind of native genomes and flavor profiles, as you were just saying, are considered amongst the most desirable, there's kind of been a big historical, cultural, and political influences over the past 60 years that have deferred many chocolate makers, which demand both quality and uniformity. I think one of the biggest problems that I had found is kind of the whole labor issue that I heard you talk about on your show last week, that kind of agriculture in these developing countries is kind of socially hemmed with, you know, hints of colonialism and whatnot. And so mm-hmm. there's kind of a big incentive for people to not be in that industry. It's kind of associated with enslavement to the land and whatnot.
Very much disincentive to be farmers. You know, part of the issue is that you notice that there's, you know, obviously the issues related to variability. So you go to one farm and the farmers are doing a good job, and you go to another farm and the farmers aren't doing such a good job. And there are, you know, some specific government policies which have an effect on just the general attitude with respect to what the farmers want to do. I mean, is the government setting prices? Is the government setting standards? Are they setting guidelines? You know, how does that all work down there?
Yeah, all right, absolutely. So the government kind of, and you can kind of see because of the kind of the way agriculture is set up in those developing countries, you kind of understand the reason why they have protectionist measures towards labor and whatnot. And you can know that cacao was one of those things when it was used by big industry that it was consumed in it, quantity was the most important thing, whether it was fine flavor cacao or bulk from like Africa and the Ivory Coast. Quantity was the most important thing. Now, when you're trying to establish a prosperous environment for small farmers, now when you look, the average farm size in the world is about an acre and a half.
Right.
And so the average farmer doesn't really produce that much cacao. And so in order to ensure them that they can live a prosperous life, they kind of set a floor, like a standard export price control, for which cacao is bought from farmers mm-hmm. in its raw form. And so when you have stuff like that, it kind of creates a system of buying from farmers that does not reward value and good practice, and it inherently creates no incentive to grow and harvest and ferment properly. And quite frankly, it was really shocking. Like, you see Some places where farmers would bring in about a bag and a half, 2 bags of fermented cacao, and the person who was the buying agent would say, you know what, this cacao came in, it was only halfway fermented, so we had to wait about a week and then try to ferment the rest of it again. And from what I've read and from what I've studied, that's just physically impossible.
It doesn't work very well.
Yeah, and I think that's a common thing. I saw that a lot in Ecuador as well.
Okay.
It's just the way that's kind of incentivized is it's not really tailored towards quality. And so you do get these tremendous differences between quality, even though that the price could be the same because of those controls and protections towards the small farmers, you do just get a tremendous array of quality.
Well, I remember you're talking to me and saying that you're expecting a container on the West Coast in about 2 weeks or something like that.
Yes, this Sunday, the first of Gran Cuva from Trinidad is going to be the first in the U.S. It's on its way.
Okay, so Gran Cuva, for the listeners who might not know what that is, what's Gran Cuva?
Gran Cuva is an old, probably one of the most exciting cacao regions in Trinidad. It has one of the old world Valrhona has had one of their single origin bars from there forever. And it has the typical chocolate soils, high acid. It has pretty much just one of the most desirable reasons. We found that it kind of has a cliche signature marshmallow taste that's found in its beans.
Okay.
And it's just a tremendously cool region.
And so this is the first time beans from Gran Cuva are being brought into the United States for chocolate makers.
Yeah, and I think cacao from the region may have found its way to Mars or Hershey's through New York and through all those other districts' importation methods, but no one has really made a single origin from Trinidad chocolate yet.
In the United States?
In the United States.
Because, as you mentioned, Valrhona has had Gran Cuva there for quite some time.
And some other Belgian companies.
But you also talked about something that people don't often think about is that it's not just Trinidad, it's Trinidad and Tobago.
Yes.
There's this little small island, and people don't know that Tobago also has a history of cacao. As a matter of fact, it's a producer of some pretty excellent cacao. You spent some time on Tobago?
I spent quite a... I was actually just there about a month ago attending a conference for fine cacao. Tobago 80 years ago was a thriving producer, and since then has become virtually absent. I believe they only produced about 1,000 pounds.
Okay.
And that 1,000 pounds, it doesn't get really branded as Tobago cacao. It kind of gets sent, or it gets sent to Trinidad's government facilities, where they kind of blend it with the rest of what Trinidad has to offer, and then export it accordingly. And so what I've been working on in Tobago is to try and take the Tobago Cocoa Growers Association is an organization that is a group of about 45 farmers in Tobago, and they have built a couple different post-harvest processing facilities, and they, within the next 10 years, are intent on bringing about 4 or 5 different unique regions to the chocolate world. Like, they have a really awesome estate that I spent a lot of time at called the Louis Dior Estate. And it was this 100-year-old cacao plantation that went abandoned for 50 years. It has a big brick post-harvest facility that's just rotten and rotten down, and 80-year-old Criollo trees, and they're just cropping and dropping.
Yeah.
And so what they're trying to do now, and what I've been helping them with, finding clients for their specialty little niche origins is keeping those unique. And instead of mixing everything that's in a melting pot, might as well make it something unique. And
right. And my understanding, my understanding is that at some point in the last year or two, some of those beans made their way to France. And wasn't it Francois Parlou who made an origin bar to sort of prove the quality of what it was that they've been doing down there?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think one of the guys, Mr. Dove, I think facilitated that in Tobago as well. So, absolutely. It is kind of I don't want to say it's a hidden gem, but it certainly hasn't been explored.
Well, it's certainly one that's been overshadowed by its brother island, Trinidad, but does highlight the fact, man, you know, a 100-year-old plantation been abandoned, or a plantation that's been abandoned for 100 years. There are trees that are of the same vintage, which harken back to, you know, early colonial times, probably, going back there and looking at seeing what some of the genetic variety that's there, some things that might not have been seen anywhere in the world for 50, 60, 70 or more years, lends itself to some, you know, pretty exciting possibilities, especially given the prominence of the Cocoa Research Institute of West Indies down in Trinidad. So there's probably going to be some pretty exciting stuff coming out of your project and other projects down there in the next little while. So, but we're going to take a short break from my conversation with Gino Dalla Gasparina, founder of Meridian Cacao, about what motivated him to start the business, and when we return to Straight from the Source. On heritageradionetwork.org, we'll be talking with Gino about some of the challenges associated with direct sourcing cacao.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Clay Gordon, creator and moderator of thechocolatelife.com and author of the IACP finalist book, Discover Chocolate. Today I'm talking with Gino Dalla Gasparina of Meridian Cacao about direct sourcing of cocoa beans for small chocolate makers. Welcome back, Gino.
Hey, how's it going, Clay?
It's we're talking about chocolate, and we're having a good time here always. If you're working with chocolate and you're not having fun, my thought is you're not doing it all right. So you found your inspiration in Trinidad, looking for farmers who are doing good work, right? And I understand you're also looking at a couple of other origins as well. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, and Ecuador and Madagascar. So what's some of the things that are the same and some of the things that are different about the situations in Ecuador and Madagascar compared with Trinidad?
In Ecuador, you find the same problems that you have in Trinidad with the incentives to farm and post-harvest properly. The partnership that I made in Ecuador is something that's really unique, and I've seen quite a few cacao farms in my short experience as a cacao sourcer, but I have never seen or heard of anything with regards to the amount of science, pure science, that this farm named Camino Verde in Ecuador puts into their cacao. And that's what kind of drew me to it. As someone who was kind of new to the industry, and I have all these questions about fermentation and all these systemic processes of how they do things, going to Ecuador really, really kind of sealed the deal for me on, like, what is a good farming practice and what is kind of half easily doing it. So.
Okay, so what part of Ecuador is the Camino Verde located?
It is down south of the Guayas River.
Okay, so
down
it's
by Guayaquil.
Down near Guayaquil. Is the province, it's in Guayas? That's the province that it's in?
Yes.
Okay.
And Baleo is the...
Okay, and so the flavor profile there, is it sort of, are they growing what is thought of as the true Ecuadorian Nacional down there? And what they're, you know, doing a good job of separation from the CCN 51 and the other hybrid varieties that are found down there?
Yeah, they're doing quite a few interesting things. The CCN, first of all, it's for the artisan chocolate makers and the craft chocolate makers and the boutiques that we're talking about. It's nearly impossible to pass on CCN 51 as an Ariba. I mean, it's so hard to palate just in its 100% in its chocolate liquor form that I don't think anyone could make anything satisfactory tasting out of it. But what the farm in Ecuador does that's so unique is they actually took the science of fermentation a little bit further. He borrowed a lot of technologies from wine, and he developed a system that where they can trace the flavor profiles back to the trees, back to each like 5-acre plot inside of the farm, and they kind of generated different flavor profiles for the age of the trees, the type of the soil, etc. And there's about 15 of those. And so they, through their fermentation, they can make two different flavors of Ariba. They can make one that has more pronounced floral flavors and one that has more pronounced fruity flavors. And I found this to be so cool because nowhere else have I seen a cacao farm where they really target fermentation as a key point to pull out different flavors. You see fermentation as just like it goes into ferment and then it comes out. I've never seen a farm that tailors it like they do. And it really produces excellent cacao.
Well, there has been, quite a bit of work in the lab looking at techniques for controlling time and temperature, as well as forced inoculation with particular varieties of yeast and bacteria.
Yeah.
And by doing that, you can influence the flavor profile. And I'm familiar with a couple of different research projects along that way, but not any projects that are, really in large scale production. So if, what you're saying they're doing is, this is in production.
Yeah,
in Ecuador,
absolutely.
That's
they even take it further than that. They're patenting different organic enzymes and inoculation agents to kind of tailor it to those different flavors. So it even goes further into the science of fermentation to, halt acid from coming out or keep it in, and et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, very interesting. And they're also working with soil biochemistry in order to be able to do nutrient balance in the soil to bring out flavors as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. And they have one of the most cadmium. The U.S. isn't really familiar with those issues in cadmium and chocolate farming, but he has found a way to kind of combat that as well through just what you were talking about, through different types of irrigation and different techniques to keep those heavy metals out of it. So, he really is a leader in that aspect of the industry, and I learned so much from him. And that's what being young in the industry, times like those where I just feel so humbled and hope to someday be on that scale.
Well, even somebody level. Who's got nearly 20 years of experience, and knowing about this stuff in theory, but finding somebody who is actually being able to do it, implement it, is quite remarkable. And Ecuador does have a problem with its volcanic soils and problem with heavy metal contamination. There's been at least one recall in the last 10 years of chocolate that had too high concentration of cadmium or some other heavy metal, and it just had to be pulled from the shelves. But one of the things that I learned last week in talking with Dr. Christy Leslie, who's the education director for the Northwest Chocolate Festival, is that, in Ghana, what happens is the government sets a price that's basically the farmer gets paid 70% of whatever the world market price is. And the whole notion of there's enough money, at the farm level so that the farmer can not only earn a living but maintain his trees. So how does, you know, what is the, how do you put together your pricing model? How do you figure out what to pay the farmer? I'm going to assume it's different in each one of the places that you work with.
Absolutely, and I found that to be a really interesting topic. The price of fine flavor cacao is so ambiguous. You know, we have bulk cacao using the commodity price, but the reality is fine cacao cannot be pegged to a trader's commodity. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, like you were saying in a couple weeks ago in your show, I was listening. The realities of the scale economies between what is fair and what is not fair in between, say, the Ivory Coast and Trinidad, who has a thriving oil and gas sector and a pretty high standard of living. I mean, that's completely different. What's fair to one is not fair to other, and so you always have to keep that in mind. And so, and the reality is the price that is paid is completely dependent on what they need to survive and prosper. And Trinidad cacao in general is way more expensive than Ecuador cacao, and so much so that you even count how expensive it is by using multiples of the New York Exchange price.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah,
so that's
absolutely
the price.
Almost
the
threefold.
So
when buying harvest in even as a whole.
Oh, interesting.
Harvest.
So if the market market right now, I mean, the New York market price is around $2,600 a ton.
Yeah.
And so, and that is the price that gets paid at the point of export, not necessarily at the farm gate.
It depends. The farm gate, usually small farmers sell in the form of wet beans, and I've heard a general price for which they pay for wet beans is between 50 cents and a dollar a pound.
Is that in Ecuador or in Trinidad or
That's just both. That's just the typical
pretty much
co-op
anywhere
environment. Like
okay.
if you were a farmer and going to sell your wet beans to a co-op for post harvest, and it would generally be between 50 cents and a dollar a pound.
Okay.
Right.
But what you're saying is that if the world market price is roughly $2,600, then the price you're paying at the farm gate is in the $8,000 to $8,500 a ton.
It is no. It's less. I've seen cacao that
okay.
expensive. But the partnerships that I have made are not quite that high. In Ecuador, one of my contracts with the farm, it is pegged to the price.
Okay.
At about $1,800-$1,900 above the New York exchange price, and in Trinidad, the price on the New York commodity could double tomorrow, and I would still pay the same price that I'm paying today. So mm-hmm. it changes, and
right.
it's different for every model of business. Ecuador's are more right. capital-intensive farms generally, and Trinidad's
okay.
kind of a
right.
co-op
so,
effort.
So it does, however, the prices that you're paying does more closely reflect sort of the local economic conditions, the local traditional ways of doing business, and just the other infrastructural issues associated with, you know, what is it that the farmer needs in order to be able to survive and maintain their trees.
Absolutely. That is the biggest factor.
Okay. So that's one way in which the sort of direct sourcing model, and as I understand it, you have relationships directly with the farmers, you manage
yes.
transportation from the farm to the port of export, you then put it on the container, bring it to the United States, it comes to your warehouse. So you've got end-to-end control, to the extent that anyone can when they put it on a container ship,
yes.
Of the entire supply chain.
Yes.
Right. And so we can sort of understand why that's a little better for the farmer, because you can give them a price which better represents what
yeah.
the cost of production is. But, you know, what does this mean for the chocolate maker and the consumer, the direct sourcing aspect?
I think it significantly benefits a consumer, because I kind of have a seal or a guarantee, I guess, that, like discussed earlier, that fermentation will be uniform, that all practices are safe and conform to the highest of standards. I also only, you know, I truly believe at the root of everything, everyone must prosper in any sort of business. And I think the prices I have paid and everything, it just suits the industry better, I guess.
Okay. And so this is a brand new business. Meridian Cacao.
Yes.
And you're expecting your first container, which is the Grand Cuva, to be arriving sometime in the next couple of weeks. I think you said you're expecting the cacao from Camino Verde to arrive sometime in October. And then also another origin, Madagascar, in October or November?
Yes.
Okay. And that the way the business is set up is that, you know, if you're a home hobbyist who's looking to learn how to use chocolate and are looking for a source for high quality cocoa beans, you can go in and you don't have to buy an entire bag of 50 or 60 kilos. You'll be able to buy in smaller quantities. Right? But if you're a chocolate maker looking to buy a couple hundred kilos or a pallet or something like that, they'll be able to take care of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I'm sorry.
No, I said absolutely, yes.
Okay.
That is the...
So, is there anybody else doing anything like this?
I have not found anyone that offers a variety. You know, you see kind of farms and estates kind of making efforts on their own to market in the U.S. But I think by offering a variety, it kind of gives consumers the option. You know, there's different flavors, and each region has something unique to bring to the table. And whether you want to make drinking chocolate, and this is suitable for, and one origin's better for that than the other, there shouldn't be a big fight and a fuss to where to find cacao that fits your needs. And so that was kind of the...
That was the idea.
And
so if people wanted to go to meridiancacao.com right now, it's still just a landing page. I mean, this is brand new. But over the course of the next couple of weeks, as cocoa beans come into the country, you'll be able to establish an online presence where people will be able to go and purchase their beans and experiment with them and play with the chocolate. But I'd like to thank you today. I would like to thank you today for coming on. I've been talking to Gino Della Gasparina, the founder of Meridian Cacao, a new boutique cacao broker that's working with a direct sourcing model and that caters to the hobbyist and smaller craft chocolate makers. I want to thank Jack Inslee for producing and engineering today's show, and thank Aaron and the rest of the Heritage Radio Network team for their hard work building, maintaining, and growing HRN. You can always find archived episodes of Straight from the Source on heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes as a podcast. If you have any questions that you'd like to hear answered on future programs, call 718-497-2128. Email the show at info@heritageradionetwork.org or contact me through thechocolatelife.com. And as always, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.